For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Seltzer, she likes him for him.
Good God.
You have killed me, Joe. I was singing it during in the hallways. I will sing it in my head all day long.
Oh, my Lord. You know, we got a lot for today's show. So not just the intersection of all the teams. Flyers back in action tonight. Sixers got a Paul George problem. He hyperextended his knee last night. Looks like Joel's not going to play nearly as much as, you know, we would want this year, ideally. I mean, we'll see if he's ready for the start of the year. Sounds like he's not going to play back-to-backs. I mean, the whole thing sounds like a mess. Phillies, by the way, Phillies today at 11 o'clock. You may not know this. Here on WIP, a press conference at 11 o'clock. And here's what's interesting about it, Seltzer. Dave Dombrowski and Rob Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
So is that and we're going to air it. My point is we're going to air that press conference. And obviously it's something on our program tomorrow. We'll talk an awful lot about tomorrow. And, of course, the rest of the shows will talk about it today because it happens at 11. James, does that mean Rob Thompson is definitely back as the manager?
I mean, probably. Like, the only thing is if they announce
Doug
he's
Peterson.
Moving to, like... No, I don't think it's that. I think it's the only option is if they start the press conference saying we're moving Rob Thompson to, like, a front office role.
So
or
unless they announce
role,
it, he's back.
Unless they announce it at the press conference, I think he's absolutely back.
I did so. So, you know, we can throw that in the mix if you want to comment preemptively. If you know, let's be real. I mean, chances are what James just outlined is a possibility. Chances are that's not going to happen.
I don't expect that. You asked me, is there any chance? That'd be my
answer.
Yeah.
So what is your opinion of the Phillies to hold a press conference with Rob Thompson and Dombrowski? I would keep Rob Thompson. I understand why many wouldn't. A lot want him out after three straight playoff, you know, failures. I will offer this one opinion about the Phillies in a big picture. I actually said this last night. I was at the Darren Dalton Foundation. They do a great job raising money, the fight against cancer, and obviously trying to help, you know, individual patients that are really struggling. People are going to disagree with me on this, and that's fine. I'm just going to say it. I think people should dial back the vitriol at the Phils a little bit. And the reason I say that is because the playoffs have become a tournament now. Did they play a lousy brand of baseball for 4 days? Absolutely. Were they average for 4 months? Yeah, they were. But there's a lot of great teams that get clipped really quick in the playoffs. I mean, the Dodgers maybe are going to win the World Series this year. They lost in the first round the last 3 years. First round they played in the last 3 years. I mean, it's not like the old days where you just have one of the best record or two best records. You're in the semifinals or 60 years ago, you got the best record. You go straight to the World Series. Like, you got to play a lot of rounds now. And
no, I think there's still a lot of people who are furious with them.
Well, I think there's a lot of people unhappy to hear me say that.
Yeah, I have no intention of dialing back the vitriol they did.
Yeah.
Look at the Dodgers, how injured they were this year.
Yep.
They're in the championship series.
But let me ask this. Last year, and they didn't have Ohtani last year, but it's mostly the same player. So were they a bunch of losers last year?
Oh, last year, if I was a Dodgers fan, I'd be absolutely furious.
But are they losers?
Well, they get into the playoffs, but they were losers last year by going out the way they did.
James, you agree with that standard. Like, you guys know I feel passionate about this. I'm just curious.
What is wrong with you?
Well, no,
they're
man.
Not losers.
Well, no, but John, a lot of people are acting like the Phillies are losers
now. They had incredible. The regular season record was off the charts last year. They've figured it out. They've worked out a way to get better at doing this postseason thing. That's all part of the process.
Which team? The Phillies?
Any team
Here's
the best way I can put it. They're not losers, but they're definitely not winners. That's the best way I can put it.
Okay. All right.
That's fair.
All right. So look, you can weigh in on the Phillies thing. I mean, I'm chomping at the bit to talk more about the Phils because it's still such a hot topic. But we just have this intersection with an Eagles game and Eagles season.
They got lucky that the Eagles have so many issues going on that they're kind of on the back burner for a second.
No question. Could you imagine if Sunday had been the bye? Holy mackerel. We'd still be talking Phillies every second. All right. 215-592-9494. By the way, when you call in today, you got a shot to win a really cool prize. We're going to be giving this away, I believe, for a couple days. It's a pair of tickets to see Kevin Hart's Acting My Age tour. Kevin Hart coming to Philadelphia December 6th.
Is Nick going to that?
What age would that be? All right. So Kevin Hart with his acting my age tour at the Met Philadelphia December 6th. Tickets on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Here's the question we have for you today. A little fun question just to kind of, you know, spice things up in a different way and not have everything be just completely beating our heads against the wall. Who needs to apologize? Sirianni obviously apologized yesterday. I found it to be nice but insufficient. Who needs to apologize? Now, Seltzer, I need a ruling from you before we embark on this. Does this, no, so first, let me just say this to everyone. This is not the deepest, darkest things in society. We all understand the worst elements of society, horrible racism, horrible crime. Like, we're not talking about P. Diddy. Not that. But, James, I need a ruling. A lot of times when we do these things, it also includes people that have passed away. Mm-hmm. So in this case, would you include someone who passed away who should have apologized, but passed away and didn't before dying?
I would be okay with that.
You're good with that?
Yeah, I think that's okay, as long as they were a real person.
Okay. And again, we're not looking for the deepest story. We're not talking about
Hitler
slavery.
Hitler needed to apologize.
We're not,
we get it.
We're, yeah, yep. We're not talking about that stuff. We're talking about a little bit more mundane. So John Ritchie, who currently alive, who has not apologized?
Currently or not currently?
Or currently alive, or that was alive but has passed away, that either apologized but it wasn't a sufficient apology, or never apologize, which my guess is most of these answers will be today. John Ritchie, who needs to apologize?
It's got a little convoluted. All the driver's ed teachers who are teaching our children to not turn left. The left turn thing is so completely broken right now.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
You got a two-way. You got a light.
You got to wait till you can see.
You got the people turning left.
Got to wait till you can see.
You got two people coming up to the light.
Right.
You take a left. There's another person who's also across from them taking a left.
That's brutal.
I can't believe how often we just sit.
Do you know why?
And wait, and no one goes.
Do you know why, John?
No one goes.
Can I answer the question?
Because are you this person, by the way?
Because
it sounds like you're defending this non-left taking.
Okay, you ready for the answer?
I think I might.
You ready?
I might have a major problem.
Tell me when you're ready.
I will crush your face.
Because the person can't see enough to know if
what's wrong with you? You can't see.
If there is
what's
a minivan
that you can't
if
see,
if there is
maybe
a minivan
in
lane
you can't
two,
see.
If I can't see, I'm not 10 feet tall. I'm not Will Chamberlain. I can't see over a minivan.
I think
and if there's another car that's
going to
smoke
driving.
Me. Now, you're wrong. Seltzer, give me an answer. I think Richie needs to apologize for that ridiculous answer. who needs to apologize?
I think you're the non-left hand turn taker.
I'm just going to avoid this completely.
But you know I'm right, James.
Maybe right. Yeah. Yes. I'll go with J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams.
Star Wars. You freaking ruined it, man.
Yeah.
And not a word. Not a word from J.J. Abrams about just destroying a beloved franchise.
What did he do, the eighth episode?
Ninth.
Well, the ninth was a disaster.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's
Thank
a great
you.
Answer, James. That's a great answer. Rhea, who needs to apologize?
Joshua Harris.
It's a great answer.
For owning the Washington Commanders and the New Jersey Devils.
That's a great answer, amongst other things. It's funny. I've got
Is an
one
apology enough on that one.
Well, but it's at least it's a start, all right? Look, it's funny. Ben Simmons needs to apologize. I had the 76ers in mind, too. Give us a big-time answer, 215-592-9494. Who needs to apologize? Could be someone dead who should have before they died. Paul in Westchester right now. Paul, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Greatest sports show in the history of sports shows, no question about it.
Well, I don't know about that. You got that NBA TNT thing going, so if we're in second place, I'll take that, but thank you.
Not anymore. That's over, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, they got one more year. They got one more.
One more year.
Yeah.
So here's why I called. I'm glad you raised the Phillies, because I got to tell you, I think the depressing, put Sirianni aside, because that is a complete distraction. You look at other coaches around the league and Dan Campbell, the Harbaughs, I mean, you name it. I know, you know, Andy Reid, those are obviously the best. But you look at those coaches, and then you look at the production we're getting out of our coaches, and it's just depressing. And the issue is, and you raised the Phillies, Joe, but the issue is we have teams with such incredibly high payrolls and such storied histories that they are completely underwhelming, whether it's the Eagles or it's the Phillies' first-round loss. And I wouldn't call them losers, but like James said, they're certainly not winners. And if you go back 4 months since the break, I mean, they were, what, 33-32?
Well, they were average for 4 months. Yeah, they were 500 team for 4 months, which isn't good.
500 team with a payroll that's off the charts.
Yeah.
And so whether it's Topper or whether it's Sirianni, I think Sirianni's way over his skis. I mean, that's kind of obvious at this point. But the problem is we have underwhelming teams. And the biggest issue here, I think John raised it this morning, and I couldn't believe he raised it because I felt this way myself, and maybe all fans or a lot of fans are feeling this way. I'm sitting on the couch on Sunday afternoon. I can't wait to watch a football game. And I'm like, what am I watching this for? I think I turned on some horror film, Fantasy Island.
Well, they really are, Paul. Man. They're so boring. The Eagles right now are so boring for the 3 hours.
I don't want to feel this way, Paul. And it really does. It's extremely concerning.
And, Paul, you know what's incredible about it? Incredible about
that
being
this boring?
That they
have Saquon Barkley, A.J. Brown, and Devontae Smith.
Exactly,
yeah, right?
That's exactly
all I was thinking
right.
when you were talking about boring there. That's all I could think about.
That's supposed to be impossible. Supposed to be impossible to have that skill position players and be born.
And maybe it's the Phillies loss. It's just got everybody down. But did I even care they were playing the Browns this weekend? I mean, I watched because I live in New York, so I have to get the.
Well, the Phillies thing can create depression sometimes in that regard. I think that's legitimate. I remember feeling that last year when they lost. Paul, give me a great answer. Who needs to apologize?
Yeah, I don't know if we're going political here, like George W. Bush for weapons of mass destruction, or if that's too political for the show.
I think that's a little too heavy.
I'd say it's a little too heavy because it led to war. So we're trying to avoid war things. So we'll give you a chance
for... War, death, all that is we're trying to avoid.
Okay. Give me something a little lighter than WMDs.
All right, so no W. How about Milli Vanilli?
That's a good answer.
That's a great answer.
But hold on. They may have apologized. So I will say this, as we look these things up, I would find
it
hard to believe they did it.
I'm sure they had to have done something, but I'm sure whatever it was, it probably wasn't an acceptable apology.
I don't know about that.
We'll
have to look these things up. To be a winning answer to me, you got to have not apologized, or at least not apologize well. So we'll look things up as we go. All right, great to be with you on this, a Tuesday morning. Joe DeCameron, John Rich, Amanda, we have a lot up ahead. It includes Ron Jaworski with us in about 5 minutes. Joe Conklin taking another bite of things today related to Nick Sirianni, Brandon Graham at 7:40. And more, including some Joel Embiid news. Matter of fact, let me get to the Joel thing right now. Because some people may have missed this, but you know, he spoke to ESPN in recent days. And John, I'm guessing a lot of people don't know this, because this story I don't feel like has really gone and made the round. Because we've been so focused on the Eagles and Phillies for obvious reasons. Joel was quoted recently saying, regarding back-to-backs, he said, quote, "If I had to guess, I would probably never play back-to-backs the rest of my career." So make sure you factor that into your evaluation of what's up ahead with the Sixers this year.
I mean, aren't we okay with that, though?
But it's not good, James.
No, but...
Because home court advantage matters, playing together as a team matters.
I think we've accepted this with Embiid,
right? No, I have not.
Okay, well, you probably should have at this point accepted that he's not going to be healthy in the playoffs if he plays the full season. Like, we've gotten there.
Well,
we know what
you
this
could
is.
Stop, James, that he's not going to be healthy in the playoffs.
But you know, I get it, but you know what? Why not try something different?
Hold on, James. I get that, but here's the point I think you're missing with going there that quickly. My main point, and I'm guessing this reverberates with most people in their brain, the disappointment that it's come to that.
Like what? I thought we were already there.
But what that means about their chances to go win a championship? Like if they're of the mindset on October 15th that he can't play back to backs for the next 6 months or the next 6 years, what are the chances they win a championship?
I'm saying this is a good mindset to have. All we say every year is save him for the playoffs.
No, but you're missing my broader point.
I don't care about the one seed. You're missing my broader point.
But I care about him being a healthy enough athlete who they just signed to a 5-year extension.
But he is what he is. I think you've missed out on what he is. We know he can't get through the playoffs. That is a fact, man. What were you expecting? You're expecting something that's never happened before
to all
of a sudden happen?
So how about the Sixers a week ago when they put out a tweet that says, "Is this real life?" with a picture of the three stars?
Oh, I had a problem with that. I didn't like that either.
We're already here? I already got Joel October 15th saying he's not going to play back-to-backs. Come on.
I think it's a good thing. I want him not playing back. Again, try something different.
John, give me your rolling.
It's devastating to me. It's like deeply depressing that it feels like he doesn't have the physical ability to do the back-to-back thing at this stage. Like, he is now past that point. And the fact that he's past that point, you know, like that That's not easy.
It's not easy to deal with.
Like this is a new era. Like the sun is setting type era. Like, is that where we are now?
Well, you guys have your head in the sand.
No, I wonder that. Has decline begun?
Yeah.
Has physical decline begun?
Oh, can I answer that?
He's never made it through the playoffs. Yeah. What are we talking about here, James?
It's okay, James. You're not quite with us, but that's fine.
Point is that physical decline was already there. You guys were ignoring it. Like, my point is this is not new.
James, we got you.
But he got a gold medal, and that's what's important.
Yeah, no, that's true. All right, let's get to Sirianni. Actual Sirianni will be in an hour and 20 minutes or so, 8:40. He joins us live. But let's go not live. Let's go back to Sunday around 4:15. Eagles have won a game. Obviously, it was not exactly the most inspiring victory, but they did win a game. John, you've been in these many times with the Raiders and the Eagles. You get in the locker room. You celebrate as a squad. Let's listen to Nick addressing the team after a close win versus Cleveland. Here's what he said.
Good desire, good effort, good everything. Way to have that dog mentality. Unbelievable job, right? Guys, I know, and I told you this about why I talk about my family a lot and why I kind of correlate the two. I know in my core, I know deep down that connection, accountability, details, and toughness wins. And makes good men too. Right? I know in my core, guys, I'm praising my family on it. I know, keep plugging away. Hungry and humble. Hungry and humble. Hungry and humble. It's about everyone.
I got to tell you, here's just my opinion, John, of what we just heard. I think the messaging is nice, but I got to think the themes get old.
I like the hungry and humble thing. Yep. I just think that's so cheesy. If I'm one of those players, you know, like I just went out there and I bled for you. You know, like I sacrificed my physical well-being, I sacrificed everything I had for my teammates, for this team, for you. And it just feels, I don't know, like a little light. Like
I just would be, here's what I'd say if I'm a player. Enough with the family. Enough. We have a family too. We all have a family. Enough.
That's not effective. I do feel like a lot of times these guys, they want him to just, you know, be, look, just get it out, man. Like, do whatever you need to do. Maybe some guys are motivated by this. Like, I can't imagine I personally would be motivated in any way by that stuff. I can't imagine.
Well, especially after the fourth year.
Sure.
And if you're someone who's been here since 2021, how many times do I have to hear about his dad and his brothers and his mom and his kids? Like, enough.
Well, the problem is, like, I don't think it was all that effective even back then. You know,
Well, it may not have been, but all right. So Jaws joins us in a minute on everything going on with the Eagles. If you want to weigh in on the Joel thing, the Phillies, who, a reminder, press conference today, Dave Dombrowski and Rob Thompson. That's at 11 o'clock. We will carry that here during Joe and Hugh's show on WIP. 11 o'clock for Dombrowski and Rob Thompson. And by the way, a happy birthday goes out to one of our own, Joe Wechter. Happy birthday today, bud. The big guy's 59. Dude's getting old. I mean, not old, but sorry to the 6-year-olds out there. I just said Wechter's a little old, 59. But happy birthday to Wechter. We love him. He does a great job, huge part of our show. Jaws joins us coming up in 1 minute's time.
Listen, if your current point of sale is shaping up to be a bust, throw it on the waiver wire and make the switch to PDQ POS. It's like the MVP of point of sale solutions. Easy to use with the best support in the industry, and it doesn't take a bite out of your sales with costly fees. It's the choice for restaurants, bars, and all concept food service businesses across the country. With real-time analytics provided by PDQ POS, you can access insights to elevate your team and your play calling. PDQ POS has been rated the number one point of sale by restaurant owners for more than 35 years. So what are you waiting for? If you're in the restaurant, hospitality, bar, or casino businesses, it's time to go all in with PDQ POS. Whether you have one location or hundreds, PDQ has a solution for your business. If you want the best, trust PDQ POS. Schedule your free demo and business consultation today at PDQPOS.com. That's PDQPOS.com.
All right, we love having Ron Jaworski on the show. He joins us every Tuesday at this time. Good morning, Joss.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great to be with you guys. Everything good?
Well, I don't know.
Medium, sort of.
Some good, yeah, some, yeah.
Wins aren't even good enough anymore.
No.
Well, listen, Joss. Cleveland, 4 points. You know, coach kind of strutting around afterwards. I mean, here's the thing I'll say, and there's a lot of ways to attack this, but I'll just start with this, Jaws. I found Nick's actions at the very end of the game and post-game press conference to be very out of touch with how I think he should have felt, which is largely dissatisfied with his football team and himself for not putting it on the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, 5 weeks into the season, just not being a very good football team. And I just thought his approach after the game was very unwise. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And quite honestly, I'm very thankful that Nick apologized for his actions after the game. Or it, you know, I think he may have a different approach to what I'm going to say. You know, but he apologized, realized he was out of line, and the comments weren't the right thing that he should have done. And his, you know, berating the fans is totally unacceptable in this town. This city has given every Eagle player, coach, Philly Flyer, Sixer player, coach, undivided attention, you know, throughout their longevity as fans. So this is the greatest fan base in Philadelphia in the country, and you can't belittle the fan base. It's crossing the line to me. So I'm glad Nick apologized and got that out of the way. And I'm kind of a believer in, you know, I read a lot of leadership books like everybody does, and players and coaches do, and everyone defines their own way they want to lead and how they're going to lead. But I've always been a believer you lead by example, and then the example that Nick showed after the game was not the way I would expect, you know, the leader of a football team to act. So I'm glad he apologized. I think you got to lead by example and hope that the players follow your example.
You know, Joe, there's not a ton in my bag today to defend Nick, but I do want to present this one thing, and I think you're a fascinating person to talk to about it, which is being the focal point of tremendous criticism. So the most criticized people in our town's history, sports-wise, are generally some of the better players and longstanding coaches and players that are here for a while. I would put you and Donovan in two of the most criticized players that have ever come through Philly sports. Schmitty was as well, which is insane because he's one of the best ever. What is it like to receive immense criticism at times that you can hear with your own ears while standing on the field and not respond? How difficult is it to hold it in when you're freaking frustrated with the guy screaming at you?
You learn to deal with it. It's the first time you hear boos, and hey, when you play the quarterback position, or if you're under the scrutiny of the fans and the media, you know, not everything's going to be, you know, roses. So you got to learn how to deal with adversity, and I, like every player in that position, had to deal with it. It's like, why don't they like me? It's never personal, but you know, the first time it happens, it bothers you. And I recollect a story. It was probably in the mid '80s. It was one of those games where I was not playing real well, and you know, I'm ready to go back on the field with the offense and 10 other players, and all of a sudden, it was under the Marion Campbell era, and I'm running on the field, and Marion Campbell calls me back, and all of a sudden, 10 other guys running the field. And so they want to give me a play call. I run back on the field. Now, you're alone running on the field, 10 guys are on the field, and the boos cascade out of Veterans Stadium. And all of a sudden, oh, boy, okay, the boos are directed at me. So it's kind of a litmus test for quarterbacks and other players. I walk in the huddle, and 20 eyeballs are looking at me. 10 players got two eyes on me. They want to see how I'm going to deal with it, how I'm going to handle it as a guy that, hey, maybe not be playing well, but the fans are on my butt right now. I walk in the huddle. I look at those guys that are all staring at me. I said, they still love me. And, you know, and it just kind of cracked everyone up. It was like, okay, move on with it. You know, let it go. Move on with it. And I think we drove for a touchdown, by the way. Hmm. But that's how you know, it's how you handle the adversity and how you recover from it. So
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think Nick will be fine. I think at this point, after you realize he made a mistake, he's recovered from it.
I'll say this, Charles, about the apology yesterday. I thought it was nice but insufficient.
Well, it's an apology, so I'll take it as that,
yeah,
Joe.
Fair enough. All right, Charles, we have a Twitter poll question of the day today. I want to talk about the team itself. Twitter poll brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. It's truck season at Armin. Available 1.9% financing on all new 2024 light-duty Armin Silverados. Together, let's drive to ArminChevy.com. Poll question, Charles, what's your answer to this? It's a fill-in-the-blank. The Eagles are a blank football team. The choices are good, average, bad. What's the right answer?
Good. It's a good football team. You know, I watched the tape on both sides of the ball last night. I think offensively you can see the dynamic offense that we have when everyone's healthy. You know, Jordan Mailata injury is going to hurt for a couple of weeks, depending on how long he's out. But you can see that there is talent on this offensive side of the football. So I'm very impressed with the talent level.
And actually, I was very impressed with the defensive side of football. Now, I know it's easy to say, well, Deshaun Watson, you know, Cleveland Browns, bad football team. But I like the way that Vic changed up his game plan. The young players flashed. I'm telling you, this is going to be a good defense. Now, maybe not this year, but it's a year or two away from, I think, possibly being a dominant defense. A lot of young players with great talent. I mean, it was really impressive looking at the tape and seeing guys flying around. The young guys in the secondary making plays. Blitzes. You know, Vic Fangio's not a heavy blitz guy. He'd be very creative, but not a blitz guy. He turned them young boys loose, man. It was fun to watch them, watching the safeties fly in there, making plays in the line of scrimmage, getting sacks. It was all good. It was all good stuff defensively to me. Now, we're not there yet, but you can see that the talent is there.
Yeah, there's lots of talent, but just like when you look at the opening drives of the season, we talked about it earlier in the show. Week one, 3 plays. Week two, 4 plays. Week three, 3 plays. Week four, 3 plays. Week five, 3 plays. All those three and outs for the opening drive with all the preparation that goes into perfecting those opening plays, Jaws. How do you explain that degree of futility offensively with all the talent and all the preparation that should go into that?
That's a great question, John, and you're spot on. You go back to last year at the end of the season, the first quarter – doldrums were still in place. They couldn't score in the first quarter. And that, to me, that is coaching. And particularly after a bye week, when you have a chance to break down your opponent as deep as you can possibly break it down, and you can't move the football against the Cleveland Browns defense. That's a pretty good defense, but still not to score, not to get a first down. It's just bizarre. But I will lay that when coaches have a week to prepare and you formulate your first 12 plays, 15 plays, whatever teams do, they have different number of plays they script in the beginning of a game, but we are not coming up with the proper plays early in the game. It was puzzling to me. The first play of the game, almost get 6 yards. We throw twice after that. I sometimes just don't know what the thought process is, and obviously not scoring is indicated, but that this team can't just get it together on the first quarter of a football game.
And why does it feel like the offense is more basic? You know, the play action, the pre-snap motion, so much has been made of these things. And we talked about coming into this season, hey, we expect we're going to see more pre-snap motion. Hey, we expect we're going to see more play action. Hey, we expect we're going to see more Jalen under center. But it's going the other way, isn't it, Jaws? And
you know,
why?
The numbers bear that out. You know, there's so many companies now that do statistics, and you know, the Eagles are using less motion as we go further into the season. And you know, when Kellen Moore came here, we were all excited about the dynamic offense that we expect to see. The players are there. I just think it's a little dull game planning right now, and it's got to change. And I'll harp on this till the cows come home. I believe you got to run more of this offense under center. I think it's easier to have your running game working, your play-action game working, and your bootleg game working when the quarterback is under center. Now, I don't know the reason why. I wish someone maybe asked Kellen Moore or Jalen Hurts, you know, why no under-center running game? Why no under-center play-action pass game? Why no under-center bootleg game? I just don't know. But I think when you give the defense the optic of potential run or pass and a power running game and a sweep game and trap game, it gives them more to think about. We just haven't done a good job with that through 5 games.
So, Jaws, here's my theory on that, and I tend to think I'm right, but, you know, Jalen Hurts for the last 10 years has barely been under center, and he's not comfortable with it, and he doesn't want to in year 5 of the pros after years at Alabama and a year at Oklahoma and 4.5 years in the pros. He just doesn't want to do it much. He's not comfortable. Does that theory vibe with you?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm an example. You know, I played it in Youngstown State. We kind of used a shotgun offense. We called it the side saddle T, where I was about 3 or 4 yards away from the center, never a direct snap under center. So all of a sudden, I get selected to play in the Senior Bowl game, and within 5 days, I had to play that game under center. So it's not that difficult.
Are the Giants?
Thank you, Jaws. Thank you.
Well, children go out there and take snaps under center.
Oh, John,
Second graders go out there. They're fine doing this.
John, I'm going to ask you a question. What's your theory? Because I don't think Kellen Moore, who had Dak Prescott under center, forgets how to call under center plays. John, what is your theory of why they're not under center?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, it does not make sense.
But there's got to be a reason. I mean, we all acknowledge there's some reason.
I mean, I just don't know what else it could be.
I don't
if
either,
it's not Jalen. Like, at this, yeah, at this
think,
point.
I think that the rationale is that Jalen's not comfortable until he denies that or says, it doesn't bother me either way. That's what we have to take out of it.
He's
not comfortable with it.
Every time I've been around an offensive coordinator and a quarterback, their discussion is always, what do you like here? What do you like here? What do you like here? Plus 15, what do you like here? I'm sure that boils down to also, where do you like to stand? Do you like to be under center? Do you like to be in shotgun? I mean, that is one of these things that the quarterback comfort level is tested on, correct?
There's no question. None of these things are new. Yeah. Jalen's been playing the position for a long time. He can obviously play under center. The tush push is a clear example of that. You know, that's where he's under center 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Have to be, but he can't. You know, I think he can play under center, and I think the illusion of your whole offensive package available to the quarterback and the offense in general dictates a lot of issues to the defense. When you're in the shotgun, you have a limited play selection where, you know, the way teams break down your offense and defense nowadays, they pretty much know everything you're doing. So I think the more confusion you can create for the defense, the better off you are offensively. As I start off this discussion, the talent is here. This is a dynamic offensive team. I think it's going to get better as the season wears on, but there are talented players. You know, we saw what A.J. and Devontae are in that offense, and even Calcaterra comes through with a big game.
Yeah.
You can see that this is a dynamic offense.
All right, Jaws, final thing here. Brandon Graham about to join us in a minute. Let's just do one question on what's ahead for Week 6. The Giants, is it just the same old Giants team? I mean, should we brace ourselves for a game? Not brace, the wrong word. Should we prepare ourselves for a game in which the Eagles should beat the Giants?
Well, they should beat the Giants. Hey, before I elaborate on that, congratulations to Brandon Graham. He's been an iconic football player in this town and a guy that's been a stand-up guy, and I couldn't be happier for anyone more than Brandon Graham. What a terrific, terrific guy, playing 200 games this league, man. That's pretty impressive. You know, I played 188, and I know how hard it could be to get to 200. It's absolutely just incredible. So congratulations to Brandon Graham. And the Giants are still the same old Giants. They're better, but they're still the same old Giants.
Yep, that's what I thought. Jaws, great stuff, bud. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Jaws.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, good stuff. Jaws. Ron Jaworski. All right, we go from Ron Jaworski.
That was so cool, by the way. What, the guy who played 188 games, 188 starts, saying how difficult 200 must have
been. Oh, no question.
I mean, it is astronomical.
And Jaws did it in an era. Jaws did it in an era when the quarterback was just getting the hell beaten out of him. I mean, and he had, true. I think, you know, younger listeners may not know this, but older will. He set and for many, many years held the NFL's all-time record for consecutive starts by a quarterback, which I think Favre beat.
Yes, Favre beat. It was definitely Brett Favre.
Yep. But that was really something. All right. 200 is a tremendous number. It's what Brandon Graham got to. Of course, the Eagles with the win the other day to get to 3-2. BJ in studio with us, as he is every Tuesday at this time, presented by Primo Hoagies. Be like Brandon Graham. Get to 200. Also, be like Brandon Graham and make your game day epic with party trays from Primo Hoagies online at primohoagies.com. It's not just a Primo, it's a hoagie. And it's 200 games. Brandon Graham, congratulations, bud. How are you? Dude, that's a tremendous accomplishment. Congratulations, Brandon.
Man, I appreciate you.
Just unbelievable.
You're hearing from a lot of people, like leading into the game and afterwards? Because I'm sure 3 weeks ago, maybe people didn't know, hey, 200's coming up. But in the approach to and then the aftermath, as the word spread, 200, did you hear from a lot of your former teammates and buddies?
I did. And I didn't even know it was 200 till this week. They just told me. And, man. I was like, wow. I mean, people keep track of everything. So when things come up, it's so cool to just reminisce and just know that, man, I'm not even done yet.
Good for you. You know, even John Ritchie over here, who's Stanford, and I think he only got in there because of football. That's a whole other matter. Even John knows every week you now set a new record.
Yeah.
Every week.
Every week.
You know?
I was Michigan also.
Michigan also.
And my son's Michigan too.
Man. Yeah, no, so. I know. I'm just joking. All right, so Brandon, congrats on the win. Obviously, you know, a lot's been swirling around. We'll get to some of that. But the win, 3-2. How do you feel about this football team through 5 games?
I feel good, man. Coming out of the bye, we just wanted to get a win. We know we got work to do. But I don't want to feel too good where I don't feel like we got to work. So I know where we got to go. The way we fight, the way our defense played this week, I mean, I'm happy with that, and I know we can build off that. And then the offense, they going to take care of itself. And my coach, he going to do his thing. You know, he make mistakes. Yeah, I would have probably said some stuff to the fans, too, because of all the stuff you hear. Because, I mean, it's hard not to hear because we got to talk to y'all all the time. And, you know, we got to answer questions. But for Nick, you know what? I got his back, man. Stay off my coach, man. Because my coach going, hey, he going to get right because I'm a helper.
Well, listen, Brandon, I admire, and look, I really admire your desire to help him. I think it's great. So let's get into this a little bit here. So this is who he is,
mm-hmm.
which also in past years at times annoyed fans and I think even the organization. I mean, Jeffrey Lurie had come out and said it can be counterproductive. So what, in your opinion, and I'm not trying to make you a psychologist here, but, you know, you're someone who cares about Nick Sirianni, wants to see good things for him and the team. What is the right way, in your opinion, to balance here's who he is, but there's also a certain stately thing of being the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles and connecting with the fans and reporting to the owner and overseeing the team as the leader? Like, how would you advise he balance that given who he is, but some of the demands by people and what they want?
Well, I just, like you said, you got to find a balance, of course, because, I mean, you know, as you know, he got emotion, and he want to show it. And at the end of the day, you know, I don't want him to be nobody other than himself, and I don't want him to look like anybody else that came before him because he going to make his own stamp. But I just know that for him, he has a job. He's the head of this team, and, you know, your boss wants you to be like this, you know, so you got to find your balance, like you said. And so I know he's grown since those days of 2022, but it was kind of me and Jalen talking like, hey, Coach, be you. You know what I'm saying? Be you. We need 2022 you. It's just that emotion is what I'm saying. But the balance has to come because you do have others looking at you and, you know, as the head guy. And if it's cool with you doing it, I mean, I know like people talk about Jalen Carter, that came up on me last night. And it's like, yeah, you got to show him that way, but you got to find that balance. But I know I just want him to be him.
How important is it to respect your coaches? You know, like true respect. How important, player to coach, is that concept?
It's very important on that, you know, because if you don't have no respect for him, you ain't going to want to fight. You ain't going to push yourself to your limit on where you could go as a player because you want to look good, of course, but you want to make sure you make your coach look good too. And it be some people that I've been on some teams where they ain't like the coach, and you can tell by all it takes is one thing to happen on the sideline and mm-hmm. then they blow up. So I know that's not the case here.
Brandon may have been referring to 2013 to 2015, by the way.
it was
crazy.
But there's something, like, as a fan of this team, there's something that it's concerning to us when we see actions from the coach that might lead to less respect from the players. You know, like, if I'm a player and I see him, you know, acting in a way where, like, I know that's not the way I conduct myself. I know he shouldn't be doing that. Do I lose respect for him? Are there players on this team who did?
Well, let me translate.
That's a concern.
Brandon, let me translate this for a sec, because John and I have talked a lot about this over the last few years.
Okay.
So what John's basically indicating is that Nick does things that he knows when John was a player 20 years ago would have bothered John. What's been fascinating is, with the exception of Jalen and some strange comments he's made at times at the podium, it does sound like you guys love
You're not
Nick
bothered.
Sirianni. Is that accurate? Like, you guys love it and aren't bothered by some of the goofy stuff, or does that get irritating sometimes?
I think it's just when, you know, I accept Nick for who he is as a person, as a coach. I've seen him grow over the years. The stuff that you don't see behind the scenes, you know, like what you say, mm-hmm. he had to find a balance, you know, on how he do stuff with us too, just as much as he got to do it with y'all. But it's tougher because it's not like we condemning him like y'all are. So it's like, mm-hmm. I can feel where he's coming from because I've been there and I wanted to, but I do it with my play. And so I found my balance where I ain't had to go off on fans. I just show you by what I do on this field, because that's what I'm hoping for him, that he can turn. He is going to turn this around as far as, you know, how people expectations of this whole situation, of this offense, of this team. You know, the expectations is at it's all the way through the roof, you know, beginning of the season. And so when it's not that, people start to question things. And so for him, I just say, stay being who you are. We love Nick. You know what I'm saying? We love the organization on who they bring in here, because they do bring some great guys in. And of course, like I say, he's not perfect, but I know I can understand exactly where this whole Sunday thing came from. And yeah. But I know he's learned from it, and we gonna make it about ball. We going out here to beat the Giants this week, and hopefully it matches the expectations of the fans and everybody else. But as long a win in this league is hard enough. But you know what I'm saying, the way we win, sometimes people ain't gonna like it. But man, I'm telling you, it's a grind out there.
Let's talk about another very uncomfortable concept. I mean, the Nick Sirianni thing, that was uncomfortable. your snaps, your snaps in this last game were considerably less than prior to the bye. I look at that and I'm thinking, oh man, they thought he was being used too much. They're thinking they need to pull back a little bit to try to preserve him for the long haul. Is that what's being discussed behind closed doors with your play time?
You know what? I'm just, whenever they want me out there, I go out there and I'm having fun, man. But when you look at it, yeah, I know over the years I have been like, you know, preserved, because you know if we gonna go down the line, you know, and make a run. I think that you know, the availability is everything. So I'm feeling good.
That's good.
And man, and I understand overworking too. I don't wanna overwork myself, but I mean, man, at the end of the day, whenever they call my name, I'm trying to go out there and make a play.
All right, Brandon Graham with us. I'm sorry. Everything's good.
Yeah, everything's good.
Good deal.
You know, there's also a theory, Brandon, you guys were going to be Cleveland no matter what. And so maybe that was also.
But you know what? Everybody wanted to see blowout like how the Commanders did. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look, it's a week-to-week league. Like, I don't even play that game no more. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, the Lions blew out the Cowboys, so we should do the same thing. Or we should do this, because every week is different. The preparation, all the stuff. The scheme, you know what I'm saying? It's like it, and then sometimes it's the panic of like who you playing, and then the expectations of like us playing Dallas that week. Say we sometimes, you know, you get people that want to do something different to switch it up. It's like, no, let's go out being us, because this is no matter if they know, we go out there and we work. But I feel like, you know, people just don't know that about the league. And when you see the Panthers, they got them a win when they was getting blew out by everybody, and then they got them a win because you took them lightly. And so, like I say, we going to go out there and get a W so we can come in feeling good on Monday, and then we'll talk about the problems. I'm okay with talking about them.
I know you are.
We going to fix them. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to get that criticism. I've learned to just accept that. That's part of it, but it's what you do with it. And so I hope for Nick's sake, which I know it will be, that he's going to put together with his staff, you know, the best game plan that we can do out there on Sunday to go help us win.
BG in studio with us, as he is every Tuesday at this time. And by the way, John, just to be clear, when I said you're going to beat the Browns no matter what, I wasn't saying that so much in-game, but that may have been a thought process of the coaches prior to the game. You know, because let's be real. I mean, it was probably the easiest game on the schedule, and that may have been a theory. All right, let's get to what Sirianni said yesterday, the apology. Then we're going to get right back to the phones. I found this apology nice. I also found it, frankly, insufficient. But make of it what you will. Here's Sirianni yesterday.
Have you heard from Jeffrey Lurie at all about what happened yesterday, and what was his feedback?
No, Mr. Lurie and I talk every time after the game, every time. I haven't talked to him yet today. I know how supportive Mr. Lurie has been through everything. I would say this about that. You know, what I was really doing, I was trying to bring energy yesterday, energy, enthusiasm yesterday. And I'm sorry and disappointed on how my energy was directed at the end of the game. And, you know, my energy should be all in on coaching, motivating, right, and celebrating with our guys. And so, you know, that's, you know, and I got to have better wisdom and discernment of when to use that energy, and that wasn't the time.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.